This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome along, everyone. It's another edition of We Are Going Up, episode 113, to be exact. I'm Mark Crossley, your host with maybe the most, and alongside me this week, a man who can hopefully give us a review of The Hobbit 2, Mr. David Cameron Walker. How was it?
It was excellent. Fantastic. Much better than the second one. And the ending.
Better than the second one. It was the
much better than the first one, sorry. But the ending, without giving anything away, it just stops dead in the middle of, like, of the action.
I think you're just giving it completely away there.
The Sopranos. One of the, like, most frustrating cliffhangers I've ever seen.
Do you know that it's been nominated for 3 Oscars?
I do now.
But none of the good Oscars.
No. Best visual effects, best sound editing, and best sound mixing.
Well, you probably could tell me more about the sound mixing,
that's a good point.
Visual effects were certainly spectacular.
Okay. Carl McQueen's here as well.
Hello.
After a few weeks away. Have you got anything to review for us? What was the last film you saw?
Outside of ones at Christmas, you mean, like Home Alone?
Toy Story 3. We all enjoyed Toy Story 3,
Captain Phillips was brilliant. Yeah. How Tom Hanks didn't get an Oscar nomination.
I nearly cried at the end.
Really?
Well,
it was quite emotive. Brilliant ending.
We are morphing into Wittertainment a little bit. Before we get cracking, a quick doff of the cap to the chaps at Audible. They've kindly settled this off for us that we've been plugging on the show for a while. Basically, you get a 1-month free trial and you get to download one free audiobook of your choosing. And let's face it, even if you've never considered the possibility of listening to an audiobook before, everyone loves free stuff. It's a free audiobook for you. All you need to do is go to audible.co.uk/going up and click through there. You get a whole month free, and you can even cancel before the month's end if you don't want to pay after that. Simple as that. Who won the Masters Snooker on Sunday night?
Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Yeah. Ronnie O'Sullivan's book is on there. Running the Autobiography. Sven's book is on there. Neil Warnock.
Does Sven narrate it? That'd definitely make me buy it.
Absolutely. I don't think he does, unfortunately. I'll give you a clue on this one, by the way. The number one audiobook on there at the moment, it relates to a show that was on TV recently.
A show that was on TV recently?
I'll tell you at the end of the show, shall I?
Give me one more clue.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I won't tell you.
There's a lot of shows on TV.
It's not worth saving till the end of the show. It's it was on BBC in 3 parts.
Sherlock.
Yes, so it's the Arthur Conan Doyle.
Correct.
There you go, the complete works there.
The full works.
I think they are, yeah. So that would explain why it's top of the shop. So go to audible.co.uk/going up and get that there. Later in the show, we'll be looking back on another busy Football League weekend, which included victories for the East Midlands trio of Leicester, Derby and Forest, plus 4 of the Championship bottom 5 won as well. There was a crucial win in League One for Darren Ferguson and Peterborough, and with Notts County winning at Stevenage, we'll also give our take on the relegation picture because they're starting to pull clear. In League Two, 3 games called off and 3 goalless draws, so we're going to focus mainly on Southend United. The Shrimpers thrashed Chesterfield 3-0 to move up to 4th. They've now got just 1 defeat in their last 15 games in all competitions. And ahead of this weekend's FA Cup tie with Hull, the Phil Brown Derby, as we're calling it, we're going to speak to Chris Phillips, Southend United reporter for the Southend Echo, who'll tell us all about the great job that he's doing down there at Roots Hall. But first, let's begin this week at the Reebok Stadium. It was a disaster of a weekend for Bolton Wanderers. Dougie Freeman's men were thrashed 7-1 at Reading on Saturday, their worst defeat since 1981-82. They've now only won 2 of their last 10 games. They're just 4 points off the relegation zone. And with those debts recently revealed of up to £163 million, it's fair to say they need to avoid relegation this season. Let's speak right now to Chris Parr, who is the host of the Men in White Bolton Wanderers podcast, which you can download on iTunes. Chris, thank you very much for coming on the show and speaking to us, especially after that defeat. You were there on Saturday at the Medeski. And bearing in mind we want this as broadcastable as possible, how would you describe the Bolton performance that you witnessed?
Yes, quite. No, it's a pleasure to be on the show. I say pleasure in the loosest possible sense. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. I mean, it became, by the end of it, just a laughing stock. We were laughing among ourselves. The Reading fans were no doubt laughing at us. It became a sort of gallows humour type of place to be, and we sort of laughed our way through it. But no, there was nothing to cling to in that performance. It was an embarrassment, and that's all there is to say, really.
The defending was just absolutely diabolical. I mean, there was individual errors all over the shop. I mean, Reading just seemed to have the complete freedom over the half for a couple of the goals. There was a couple of the goals where I counted 7 or 8 Bolton players outnumbering the Reading players by, 7 or 8 to 3. And just there was all the orange shirts just standing in the box and doing nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, it was absolutely appalling defending. I mean, is this something that has been, because you've had a few defeats this season. We conceded 5 to Leicester a few weeks ago, didn't you? I mean, has the defending been that bad all season?
In a word, it's not been. Yeah, well, in a word, yes. It's not been a good season for from the defensive point of view. We got McNaughton in from Cardiff for a couple of months, and while he was there, it seemed to stem the tide a little bit. But no, we've chopped and changed that back four. We haven't known what we're doing in that area of the pitch, and I'm not saying a 7-goal thriller was around the corner, but once a team got clinical, it was entirely possible that this would happen. And another one of the goals, it was a simple header from a long ball that left one of their players in the clear. The one you mentioned, there were 5 in the box, I think, and another 2 nearby that didn't deal with it. And then another one, just two errors where players had the ball on the edge of the box. One of them was in Gog, I seem to remember, and just didn't clear it. So when you're making those basic errors time and time again, all it takes is one clinical side, and you get smashed. And I think that's what Reading were actually on Saturday. I think they only had 8 shots on target.
Well, they were clinical on Saturday, but they'd only scored 2 goals in 5 games before that. Yeah. So they weren't exactly a team full of goals going into the game. I mean, we've seen individual errors, but do you think, is there any problem perhaps with the organisation? Because he had a good reputation, Friedman, at Palace for being quite organised, and they were quite a tight defensive side under him.
Yeah, that's true. There's no need to rub it in, by the way, guys. Come on. it's true. You would think that's his bread and butter, Dougie Friedman, that sort of discipline and that organisation. But maybe you sort of look at the comments that he made after the game to answer that somewhat, and he's just not impressed by the quality. It's a dangerous thing to come out and say, as he did, there's a nucleus of players at the club that just aren't good enough to do the job that we want doing. But he did come out and say that. And it's very hard, having seen the number of games that I've seen this season, to disagree with him. It's a quality issue. You can organise people until the codes come home, but if they don't follow your instructions and they just don't have the ability, then, well, look what happened on Saturday. That's what happens.
But surely that squad is good enough quality, though, isn't it, Chris? You look at some of the players, and there's players there with Premier League experience, international experience. And Dougie Freeman isn't the first manager to struggle. Obviously, Owen Coyle before him did, to some extent. So,
well, they're one game from the playoffs last season.
Well, that's what I was about to ask.
But why are they struggling? Because we've said, for 2 seasons now, we've all tipped kind of Bolton to be up there, and they've not done it.
It's a hard one to answer. I mean, games are never won on paper, are they? So you might look at all those players and think, you know, it looks like a half-decent team could be cobbled together from it. And I agree. I think, you know, the latter half of the season last year did show that we could go on that kind of run. If you told us when Friedman took over we'd miss out on the playoffs by goal difference, we'd be amazed. And it took a hell of a run to do that. But maybe the word in response to your question is passion. A lot of the forums and the Bolton Wanderers fan sites at the minute are circulating a picture that's got Stelios Giannakopoulos, JJ Kocher, Gary Speed, and Hierro is in the picture as well, all sort of in a huddle and hugging each other in the middle of the pitch at either a goal or some such. And that's what's missing, because those players played for the team, they played for the club, and they looked like they cared and they had that passion. I think a lot of fans these days are looking at the current Bolton crop, and there's a lot of new imports, there's a lot of players that haven't been at the club very long, and there just seems to be a distinct lack of passion. And we're a positive podcast at the Men in White. We always try to look for the silver lining. But after Saturday's performance, it was so disappointing to see a team 4-0 at half-time. The chance to come out in the second half, not going to win the game, just show that you're proud and you want to wear the shirt. And they came out and lost that half 3-1 and picked up where they left off. So yeah, on paper, fine. That's what everyone says every time Bolton play. That's what everyone said pre-season. go and watch a game and see if you think the players are giving their all. And, you know, if a good player doesn't give it his all, then, you know, you're not going to get the result.
That being said, David Ngog did pick the ball up out the back of the net.
He did, actually,
when he scored
yeah.
the consolation.
That was good intent.
He was looking for the
We'd still
comeback.
Get these, lads. Yeah. We'd still get these. talk to me about Freeman, then, because, as we said, very close to getting in the playoffs last season. Last-minute goal, wasn't it, that it did for you in the end. Going into this season, presumably full of optimism, 4 points above the relegation zone at the end of January. We actually had Mark Isles from the Bolton News on, I think it was in August, wasn't it, Dave? And he was sort of telling us how he thought that they'd had a poor start, but things would turn and Freeman would get it right. We're a few months on from that, I think 5 months on from that. From a fan's perspective, did you think it was going to turn, and do you still think it's going to turn? And if not, is it not time for him to go?
I don't think it is going to turn this season. I think we are looking at a bit of a relegation battle. I think we'll win that battle, but I don't think we're going to have a run like we did last year. Is it time for Freeman to go? That's a mute question in many ways, because I don't think the club can afford to get rid of him. I'd love him to succeed. I don't think there's a single Bolton fan who doesn't want their manager to do well. But speaking to a lot of the supporters on Saturday, more than one of them used the word watershed. And, you know, it's a watershed moment, that result, because like you, we came off the back of last year's great run thinking this season we'd keep going. But some of the decisions that Freeman made have arguably, you know, alienated the fans and alienated the players. He's brought players in on loan. Joe Mason leaps to mind, who, fair enough, put his all in and scored goals, but put him straight into the team ahead of players that we have at the club, which, you know, you wonder what it means for their motivation. He's chopped and changed his back four throughout the season, sometimes through necessity, but other times just because he didn't seem to know his best lineup. That goes also throughout the team. You have two players coming in, doing well, scoring goals, even Eagles. Arguably his last appearance was his best performance of the season, and yet he hasn't made an appearance since then. I think it's two or three games now. And that's just one example of many where the fans have looked around and said, OK, that's an interesting lineup. What happened to such a person? He had a great game last time. So, yeah, we did expect to do better. Is it going to turn around this season? It doesn't really look like it, not unless that there are big changes in January, but we can't afford them. So that's long and short of it.
You certainly can't afford them, because the reason that Bolton were last in the headlines a few weeks ago was because the announcement of the amazing levels of debt that you've got, £163.8 million, the vast majority of which is owed to the owner, Eddie Davies. Phil Gartside, the chairman, has come out and said he's not particularly concerned. You know, Davies isn't going to call in the money anytime soon. You know, they're not going to go out of business. There's a plan to restructure the finance and not be dependent on promotion to the Premier League over the next, I think it's 3 or 4 years, which is all well and good, him saying that, but those figures have got to be concerning to you, haven't they?
Yeah, I hope you're going to buy me a beer after this, guys.
No, they
are very, very concerning. And the point that it's owed to Eddie Davies rather than to the bank is a big one. That does, you know, negate some of the fear. I mean, you know, fingers crossed Eddie Davies is on board and as a club supporter won't see it go under. But yeah, I mean, as fans, it just makes you lose heart even more. Really, and you wonder how a team that was 11 years in the Premier League, two European campaigns, could be run in a way that allowed it to lose what was hundreds and thousands of pounds a week. I think we calculated for the podcast at one point. We did a daily figure of what it must have been over the last sort of couple of years, and that really does, you know, that really doesn't help with the atmosphere about a club, particularly when on the field things aren't going well. But it all comes back to that nucleus of players point that Friedman made again, perhaps, which is not only are they not performing, a lot of them are on very high salaries.
Well, 30 million, it's over 30 million, isn't it, the wage bill?
Yeah, no, it's very high. I mean, I don't know the actual figure, but it's certainly more in, you know, sort of reflective of a Premier League club than maybe a Championship club fighting for survival. But yeah, I mean that's another hangover from those years, and there's also a string of signings made by the various managers we've had. It's a shame we had Allardyce for 8 years, and now we seem to be going through them like crisps out of a bag. But you know, since the Allardyce years, signed so many players that have gone for little or nothing subsequently that, you know, that debt's just continued to grow. Fingers crossed, Eddie Davies is around for a good while, but. Yeah, it is a concern, but perhaps better than owing the bank.
Chris, I guess it shows really the danger, and the importance of not
allowing yourself to have a bad season when you're in the Premier League for as long as you were, and you probably were thinking, oh, you know, we're stabilised, yeah. We're a couple of
played
European
in Europe.
Finishes, cup finals, cup semi-finals, it was all going well, even under Owen Coyle for a time it seemed to be going decently, and Gary Megson was there, wasn't he? But one bad season, as you had under Owen Coyle, and it, you know, you're set up to live in the Premier League, and you just can't cope at the Championship level, such as the massive drop in income, you know, the players that are on these massive contracts, and if you don't structure them right, they're still on them, and you can't sell them, and if you do, you know, if you do get rid of them, you have to take a hit because no one's going to buy them. So it really does show the importance of getting those decisions right on managers, on players' contracts, and making sure that you don't fall foul of a bad season, which, you know, there's probably 10 clubs in the Premier League now that could easily be in this picture in a few years' time.
Yeah, I'm going to need a chaser as well, aren't I? I think there was a quote a while back actually in the glory years from the chairman saying, you know, we're not going to get relegated now. We are, as you say, stable and we can look up these days rather than down. And when you finish in the top eight, I think it's three seasons on the trot. You maybe forgive people for thinking like that, but obviously that mentality maybe penetrated the negotiations room as well, and some of these contracts that we're left with, yeah, have crippled us to an extent. And you're right to say, you know, beware other clubs. You know, keep an eye out on what you're setting up and what you're agreeing to, because I don't think we're the only club in that position. And also, yeah, if you're borrowing off the bank and not an individual, then be doubly careful.
Chris, I'm just looking at the table, sort of looking forward to the last 20 games of the season. Bolton are obviously going to have to win more games at home because you've only won two home games all season, 8 draws at the Reebok. And what's the atmosphere been like at those home games? And have attendances been as high as you would hope?
I don't think attendances are as high as you would hope. I mean, you would hope for a full stadium every week back in the glory days with some of those players that I mentioned earlier. You know, you'd be getting 25,000-26,000 week in, week out. I don't think the attendance has been terrible given the position that we're in, you know, 15 to 18, something like that. There was a run when things were going badly of the fans starting to boo decisions. But at the same time, you look on Saturday, it was an away game, but that approach by the Bolton fans was exemplary. We were chin up, lads, get on with this. We were chanting, we were having a laugh. We were getting behind the players as much as we could, albeit on that occasion it fell on slightly deaf ears, shall we say. But no, I think that the fans have maybe understandably let the poor season get to them a little bit, and they just need picking up. I mean, who knows? We've got Cardiff at home in the cup. Maybe a little cup run could inject a bit of excitement into
the club.
That's
what I was going to ask next, yeah.
But the attendances have been, I think, fairly decent for this level and the position we are in the league. Maybe we've been booing and a little bit depressed, but then can you blame us after the string of facts you've bombarded with me?
Well, I think it's about time, Chris. You know, as Mark said there, you've won two games at home this season. We've talked about the debt of the club. We've got a team, we don't know what they're doing. So please, give us something positive to kind of like end on at least. What positives can the club, you've mentioned perhaps, you know, they should be able to get out of a relegation scrap if they end up finding themselves in it. What positives are there at the club that they can take away in the next couple of months?
Got to be a cup run, surely.
Yeah, there have been good performances from this Bolton Wanderers football team. It would be silly to say it's all been doom and gloom. The game against Forest a couple of weeks ago, yeah, we drew 1-1 at home. We should have won it. We were knocking on the door throughout the game, and it was a really, really strong performance. I don't know quite how we followed it up with the Reading game. But there are, on paper, good players, and there is the potential to get them working together. We've been linked with, I think, Danny Graham during the transfer window as well. Maybe if we can afford reinforcements in the form of loans, that could spice things up. But I think that the positives are that, on occasion, the Blackpool game and the Cup would be another example, when we go out there, are disciplined, do the jobs well, we've come away with points and we have come away with the odd win again. But we do struggle against teams in the top half, and I think we have to look at those home fixtures against the teams around us, and that's the kind of talk that you're left with when you're in a relegation battle, which I think we are. But I do think that the players on their day, you know, are capable of winning games.
Have you written a song about Saturday's game yet, Chris? That's what I want to know.
I'm not actually. I think something maybe Radiohead is suitably depressing, isn't it?
Good stuff.
We do the odd pastiche number. We'll have to look at the sort of teenage angst years from 10 years ago and find out what was popular then.
Good stuff. Thanks for coming on, mate. We appreciate it. Go and get a beer after that. I think you probably need it. That is Chris Parr, presenter of the Men in White podcast. You can find out more and listen to it by searching for it on iTunes or by going to themeninwhite.com. Next, we're going to switch our attention to a man who was actually assistant manager at Bolton for 6 years, as I'm sure you remember. He's now down in League Two and looking to guide Southend United to promotion, Mr. Phil Brown. So to Roots Hall then, where it finished Southend 3, Chesterfield 0 on Saturday. It was the visitors' first defeat in 7 games and a victory that moves the Shrimpers above them up to 4th in the table. Just 1 point off the automatic places now. In fact, it's a run, by my calculations, of just 1 defeat in their last 15 games in all competitions for Southend. And it's the perfect way to set up this game on Saturday against Hull City, Phil Brown's old club, for a place in the 5th round in the FA Cup. I'm pleased to say that joining us on the line now is a man who covers the club week in, week out. It is Chris Phillips, the Southend United reporter for the Southend Echo. Chris, first of all, thank you very much for coming on the show. Secondly, tell us all about the performance at the weekend. Was that one of the best you've seen from Southend so far this season?
Definitely. For 70 minutes or so, Southend were absolutely fantastic. They were up against one of their main promotion rivals. I would say that Chesterfield are probably one of the best sides that Southend have played already this season. They play good football, they pass the ball around well, but 70 minutes, Southend battered them, really. They went 3-0 up and were by far the better of the sides. They looked fantastic, had the ball on the deck and were playing some really good stuff. But towards the end, Southend maybe relaxed a little bit too much. Chesterfield came into the game, they missed a penalty, and Daniel Bentley, probably one of the most promising players in the lower leagues, the Southend United goalkeeper, again showed why he's just got such a fantastic reputation in the game with some stunning saves. And arguably, he was the man of the match, which seems strange when Southend have gone on to win 3-0.
Do you think that there'll be several scouts down at Roots Hall for the game against Hull to look at Bentley?
Definitely. One of the first things Phil Brown said after the game was that he can't wait for the transfer window to shut because he wants Daniel Bentley to stay a Southend player. And he's a local lad, so he's got good affinity with the club and with the fans, but he's got 11 clean sheets already this season, and Southend boasts the second best defensive record in League Two. It's only Oxford United that have conceded fewer goals already this season. He's 20 years of age, which is young for any player, let alone a goalkeeper who go on well into their late 30s. So for me, definitely, there can't be too many brighter prospects in the lower leagues than Daniel Bentley, but I don't want to talk about him too much because I like to see Southend doing well, so I don't want to see anyone come in and take him away. But it's a tricky one, obviously, at a young age. It's good to get games. If he was to move on now, would he get the same exposure and experience at another club? I don't know, but I think there definitely will be interest in him because he is a fantastic talent and one that Phil Brown's already said will go on to play for England during his career.
Wow, it's scary to think that if he's only 20 and he's a goalkeeper, he could be playing professional football in about the year 2030, something like that, couldn't
he?
Yeah,
it's probably very scary. Look at his date of birth. I think he was born in sort of like 1993.
Don't do it.
That's what I think I started at secondary school that year. So yeah, I remember my dad saying the same thing. So I've reached that age as well, and obviously Steve Bruce, manager of Hull, you remember him being a player as well. So I'm definitely getting to the stage where I'm past it. So I'm feeling very old indeed that the 20-year-old goalkeepers are playing and the former pros that I watched them and had them in my sticker book are now managing teams that I'm Southend are coming up against.
I know another player that you could, I say could, be at risk of losing is Kevin Hurst, because his contract runs out in the summer. I know Phil Brown's doing all he can to get him to sign an extension, but he's been obviously incredibly influential this season with 10 goals. Where's that come from this season? How influential has he been?
He's been incredibly influential as well. He's Southend's driving force in the final third of the field. He's very much their main creative outlet. I think last season he got something like 18 assists. He had more assists than any other player in the Football League at one stage, and he got more assists than anyone else in League Two come the end of the season. He faded away towards the end of last season, in all honesty. He started well, and then a huge number of games that Southend had with their JPT run, he seemed to sort of tire out. He missed the start of this season with a bit of an ankle injury, I think it was, but just recently he's been in fantastic form, and Southend have changed formation, and they're playing 4-3-3, and he's very much on the right-hand side of an attacking three, so he's got more of an outlet now to get forward. He hasn't got to do quite so much of defensive work, which he has done maybe in the past, and I think that's resulted in a high number of goals. I think prior to this season, the highest that he'd ever got was something like 6 or 7, and you're right, he's already up for 10 for the season. He's got fantastic deliveries. He's almost like a lower league David Beckham in the fact that he hasn't got a turn of speed, he hasn't got that much skill, but he's just got fantastic delivery, and he doesn't have to beat a man to get a fantastic ball into the box. So he really is a quality player, and you're right, he's one that Southend will be very much wanting to keep. I understand that they met with his agent on Friday to open contract negotiations, so they are trying to keep him at the club, and it sounds like he probably will stay. He seems very settled at the club. He's making all the right noises, so hopefully he's one that the South End will be able to keep hold of, because he is a huge talent, especially in League 2.
Chris, I'm going to lay my cards down on the table before one of these two mentions it.
At the start
of the season, I picked South End as one of my teams to potentially be relegated from League 2. But obviously it's gone in completely the other direction. You're having a fantastic season despite a little bit of a slow start. What exactly has Phil Brown done in terms of tactics, team selection, I know, motivation? What's he done to inspire such a fine season just over the halfway stage for Southend?
It's strange, really, because obviously the financial restrictions that the Southend currently find themselves under are well documented. The club remain under a transfer embargo, and obviously that's frustrating for him, and it means that any injuries and suspensions are obviously very hardly hit for Southend. But in a way, it's almost worked in their favour, because the squad that they've got, 20-man squad, is incredibly tight. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I think it very much is that spirit that's getting Southend through at the moment. They work very hard. If you're being entirely honest, there maybe isn't a lot of creative quality, Kevin Hurst aside, in the team at the moment, but they're just very, very hard working. They're very well organised. They don't concede many goals. The midfield three have all got incredible energy. They're all over the pitch. They're in the opponent's faces, and they're just hard to break down. They're hard to play against, and they're coming up with the goods when they need to. The goals are being spread around the side, really. Kevin Hurst, the top scorer with 10, but other than him, they're being shared around the side, and they're just, I don't know. You're right, Southend were tipped to struggle this season, especially the way they ended last season. Phil Brown didn't get off to the greatest of starts when he first came in, but he recruited very well indeed, with the likes of John White and Will Atkinson and people like that coming in. So he signed good players, he's got a good team spirit, he's got them well organised, and that will take you a long way in League 2. And right now, Southend look a real force to be reckoned with.
Tell us about Ryan Leonard, Chris, who scored again at the weekend, didn't he? He's been in great form too.
Yeah, Ryan Leonard is completely unrecognisable from the player who was with Southend for his first two seasons. He came to the club as a right-back, but at the time Southend had Sean Cahessey, who was Player of the Year last year, and ever present, and it was hard for Ryan to get into the team. They played him on the right-hand side of midfield, and he drifted in and out of the side, really. He picked up injuries. He never really got a run of games, but eventually it was diagnosed that he had one leg longer than the other. And once they got to the bottom of that and managed to get a few insoles into his shoes, his injury problems have dried up, touch wood, and this season he's just been a revelation. He's gone into the centre of midfield, and he's probably been right up there with Southend's best players. He's been captain for the last two games. He's strong. He doesn't stop running. He's got 4 goals in his last 4 games, and he's very much Southend's danger man at the moment. And being honest, you didn't really see it, because the first couple of seasons he was steady, but he wasn't anything spectacular. But at the moment, he's been superb, and he very much is the one to watch in a blue shirt for me at the moment.
Can I ask about the style of play? What kind of football is Southend playing?
Yeah, it's a good talking point, actually, as far as Southend are concerned. In the past couple of seasons, they had Paul Sturrock in charge, and on the whole, the results were good, but there was an ongoing debate among the supporters. A few of them called it hoofball rather than football, and Southend were having quite a direct approach going from back to front quite early on, and it did sort of antagonise a few supporters who'd been used to Southend's traditional play of trying to get the ball down and playing a bit of football. But that's definitely what Southend are doing this season. They pass the ball around very nicely indeed. They've got mentioned Ryan Leonard, Will Atkinson, Kevin Hurst, Michael Timlin, Anthony Straker, Barry Corr. They've, throughout the side, there's people that are sort of playing football and they can battle as well when they need to, which is obviously a creative quality that you need to have in League Two. You need to be able to roll your sleeves up and get stuck in. But to be honest, Southend are really trying to play the ball around this season. They play the ball out of the back. It might get him in trouble one or two times, but on the whole, they're playing a lot more attractive football this season, and so far it seems to be doing the job for them.
And of course, the next game on Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, is Southend against Premier League Hull City, knocking out Millwall in the last round, which, you know, a team from the Championship, but they were in terrible, terrible form under Steve Lomas at the time. Hull will be a completely different prospect, doing reasonably well, certainly the best of the three promoted sides in the Premier League this season. So it's going to be a real tough game, and I'm actually surprised that this wasn't put on TV.
Yeah, I think we all are, really. You look at it, and it's got the romance of the FA Cup written all over it, a League Two side that are doing well, own ground, the pitch is going to cut up against a Premier League side. I mean, the chances of an upset are slim, if we're being honest, but there's always a slight chance that it might happen, and surely seeing a game like that's got to be more interested than the Chelsea Spurs.
Yeah, Chelsea,
like that.
That's the one.
Who really wants to watch that, to be honest? You can see that every week in the Premier League, but I suppose Chelsea have got a worldwide audience which may appeal to sponsors and things like that, so that might be behind the decision. But it's one that everyone's really looking forward to. There's a buzz around the town at Southend at the moment. As you said, it's one defeat in 15 games, so Southend couldn't really be going into it in better shape. And there's been a lot of tough times in Southend over the years, so when these good times come along, you have to make the most of them, and that's what everyone seems to be doing at the moment. I think the ground's going to be close to being sold out. Everyone will be getting right behind the side. And as far as Southend concerned, there's nothing really to lose, really. They're up against a Premier League side, so everyone expects them to lose. So they can go out and give it a go. And I tell you what, if they can play the way they did against Millwall and the way they have done in one or two of their last few league games, then they might have a slight chance of causing upset if Hull aren't at the top of their game.
And Chris, just looking at the table, Southend are now a point behind Rochdale and Burton, so they're right in this mix. But there's so many teams up there. I mean, what would be an achievement at the end of the season? Would it be playoffs? Would it be, now they're in this position, would it be automatic promotion? What do the fans think?
Yeah, I think from where Southend have been and where they were at the end of last season, I think a top seven finish would be a fantastic achievement. But the form that the club are in at the moment and how they've been playing in the last few games, I think you've got to realistically say that the Southend should be aiming for the top three. We've passed the halfway mark of the season now, and there hasn't really been anything that Southend need to be frightened of. It's a very, very tight division. It's very close, and it'll go right to the end of the season. But having worked their way into this situation, I think Southend have got to push on from here now and really aim for that top three. So I think automatic promotion is definitely the main aim. And a couple of years ago, they just missed out on the top three. The last game of the season ended up in the playoffs, and as often the way, it was Crewe that sneaked in right at the end and they went on to get promotion. So I don't think anybody wants to be in the playoffs again after that experience a couple of years ago. So they'll be going all out to finish in the top three, and you'd have to say the chances are that Southend can do that, as long as they can stay clear of injuries and suspensions which may hinder them under the terms of their transfer embargo. Then I think Southend have every chance of doing well this year.
And the biggest reason to give Southend fans hope of automatic promotion is that last season I tipped Palace and Port Vale to be relegated, so you're up.
Yeah, can you just tip Southend not to get promotion then? That might be the secret. Just say they're definitely going to lose to Hull and definitely lose all the games they have left this season, then we might do quite well.
If Southend do go up, we don't want Phil Brown on the pitch singing, if possible. Please tell me that wouldn't happen.
I'm not too sure. They made him sing at the Christmas party, so he might be getting a taste for it again. And
but he did, or did he volunteer?
No, well, I wasn't actually there, but he said that they made him sing White Christmas he went for, so
of course
he has to sing something different, I guess. He wouldn't really be singing that in May time, but he hasn't done any team talks on the pitch yet, so he's
still time.
That one as well.
Still time. Chris, nice to talk to you. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank
Cheers.
You.
That's Chris Phillips, who's the Southend United reporter for the Southend Echo. Right now, it's time for another edition of My Club, the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their side. Remember, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, the focus is on Morecambe.
This is We Are Going Up. My club in 125 seconds.
Hi, I'm Matt Fees. My club is Morecambe.
So, Matt, do you remember your first ever Morecambe home game? I'm guessing it was at Christie Park, not the Globe Arena.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I don't actually remember. I think I was too young at the time to remember what game it was or anything like that, and used to get taken down by my dad and uncle. So it would have been probably early 90s, something like that, but I can't remember exactly who it was against or when, to be honest.
Who's your favourite Morecambe manager of all time?
God, well, I've seen three in my whole lifetime, but I would probably say Jim Bentley at the moment. I mean, you know, he's working absolute miracles, to be honest with you, at the club. So, yeah, I'd say Jim.
Matt, what about in terms of players? Who's your favourite one of those?
Well, I currently really like Kevin Ellison.
Come on, got to be Kev.
Yeah, epitome of a wind-up merchant, I think. You know, absolutely brilliant entertainment. But all-time, I'd probably say Michael Twist. You know, absolutely fantastic player for us back in the conference. And, you know, he was one of those players who could just win a game on his own, on his day.
What's your opinion of Christy the Cat?
I don't know. I don't understand why we don't have a massive shrimp, to be honest. But, you know, I'm sure the kids would love that, a seven-foot shrimp parading around the ground. But... But no, Chris is a cat. He's entertaining enough. He's calmed down a bit from his old days now. He's probably got a telling off from his run-ins with Tony Roberts over the years.
Oh, but, is he one of these controversial mascots? I see.
Yeah.
In terms of best moment, Wembley getting promoted back to the league, would that be it?
Yeah, you'd have to say that, really. I mean, the cat picked, you know, nothing else comes close to it, really. Just, you know, that the whole day and Danny Carlton's winner as well. Absolutely brilliant.
And of course, we have to ask you, are the pies at Morecambe really as good as they say they are?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Can you give us a top
chicken,
three?
Chicken, ham and leek ones. I only eat the chicken, ham and leek ones, so I've not no idea which.
The fact is, chicken, ham and leek is impressive.
There's not much variety in 20 years, is it, Matt? One pie.
No, well, yeah, we've done more. But like I said, they're the ones that they sold in Harrods, and I've, you know, they're that good. I've not sort of decided to go.
Fair enough.
It's good enough for Harrods.
Can't argue with that, Matt. Your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, so we'll have another one of those on the show as per usual next week. And I think I calculated we've done, I think, 26 of the 72 clubs on my club so far. So we've got to get through quite a lot
in. We start doing more than one a week, aren't we?
There's no order to it either. You're going to forget one.
Right, well maybe towards the end we'll stick like two or three in a show or something. Just release my club.
Let's have a special show on it.
Let's focus on what's been going on in the Football League this week. Then with our roundup, we're going to start at the top of the Championship, where on Saturday lunchtime, Leicester won 1-0 at Leeds thanks to an 88th minute winner from David Nugent. The scoreline was desperately harsh on Leeds, DC, but Leicester looking more and more impressive as the weeks go on. You've got to say at the moment, six wins in a row now.
Yeah, and it was a good goal by Nugent, wasn't it? Kevin Phillips.
Great dummy.
Played a little part with the dummy.
Of course he did. 40 years young.
And I think we legally have to call him veteran striker whenever we talk about him, don't we? Veteran striker Kevin Phillips. Yeah,
evergreen and all that.
I think Pearson said that he wants him to get involved in the coaching setup at the club after he eventually retires. I don't think he's going anywhere yet, Nigel.
No, he wants another promotion on this record.
He wants joining clubs every year.
And we certainly wouldn't bet against him doing that at the moment, would you? Because they're, as you said, I mean, they were fantastic, weren't they, the week before? Absolutely rampant. And they didn't play as well this week, which we sort of maybe predicted last week, didn't we?
Kasper Schmeichel made some important saves, though, in
absolutely,
that game.
But they got the win.
So 5 points clear now, I think, at the top from QPR, who are in second. Disappointing for Leeds, sorry, before we move on to QPR, because they do need to get a win soon, as much as they played very well.
Up, couldn't they, if Ross McCormack puts away that absolutely easy chance to clean
hit
it through?
Perhaps an over-reliance on Ross McCormack within the team. I mean, he's not scored that many in recent weeks.
A few new signings in recent weeks. Jimmy Kevin and Cameron Stewart, who unfortunately for them both made their debuts in the 6-0 thrashing against Sheffield Wednesday.
As we talked about, yeah.
But, you know, those two will certainly be looking to not take all the goal burden, because neither of them are strikers, but certainly look to provide Ross McCormack and the other forward players with chances.
Well, McCormack's now the captain, of course, because wearing the captain's armband on Saturday. Great weekend then for QPR, as I mentioned, and also Derby and Forest, because Burnley were held by Sheffield Wednesday.
And they look like they were unlucky. Kirkland made some great saves there.
Great
the
save at the end,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was Danny Ings again knocking at the door. Vokes was the one that got the goal this week, but they looked like they're unfortunate. But, you know, equally good defending and good performance in goal from Chris Kirtland for Sheffield Wednesday. It's a really good point for them.
QPR beat Huddersfield 2-1, two goals from Charlie Austin. DC.
It's an over reliance, though, on Charlie Austin there. You
I
know
think he's looking for another striker, isn't he?
Their second highest goal scorer has got three.
It's an over reliance by default, though, isn't it? Because they don't really have any other strikers. I mean, Zamora and Johnson are still on the books, but they can barely keep
they've
fit
been, they've
for
been
2 weeks
off
in a row.
Performances 8 years ago.
Yeah, and Austin, you know, two good goals at the weekend, and a slightly unfortunate Huddersfield, though. I mean, Mark Robbins said that the first 45 minutes was the best that he's seen during his time at the club. Naki Wells has hit the ground running. They were playing well. They just didn't take a few of their chances. Danny Ward had a really good chance to put them one up in the first half. Didn't take it. Could have been different if he does that. And, you know, QPR's quality told in the end. They bring on a player like Matt Phillips who had an impact at the end of the game.
They've signed Joe Lolly as well, haven't they, from Kidderminster?
Yeah.
What's the stat?
He's played like 8 levels of yeah. football in 9 months.
Playing in the 10th tier is
incredible.
He's
got a winning goal against Peterborough in the FA Cup replay, yeah. didn't he, last week? So, QPR winning by 2-1. You scored for Derby, didn't you?
I did.
Good effort. Back of the net, left footed.
It's scary, isn't it?
It really is.
Well, I was watching the highlights earlier.
The slow-mo, the repo is about to take the free kick. It's you.
The thing, you know what? I mean,
I was almost getting excited
watching it, thinking like it's almost as if I was a professional footballer.
And Forrest looked magnificent, thrashing Blackburn by 4-1 there. 10 games unbeaten and coming into form at just the right time. We've obviously talked a lot about Bolton and the 7-1 defeat at Reading. What about that from a Reading perspective? You did mention they'd only scored 2 in 5 games beforehand. They are back in the playoff picture now. What chance do you think they've got of going up?
Well, before that, last weekend, I would have said they need to score more goals. But then they scored them all in one game. They're kind of a funny team, aren't they, Reading? Like, they've not been outstanding.
Yeah, I don't think they've played
season,
that well. But
they're still there.
They're
still right in the picture.
Elsewhere in the Championship, down the bottom, what a weekend for the bottom sides. Yeovil with a win at Birmingham. Barnsley with a 2-0 win at home to Blackpool. I'm sure we'll come on to Blackpool in a second. Doncaster, who saw that coming? Beating Wigan by 3-0. And Millwall with a win against Ipswich, which may... He did a very bad weekend for Charlton, who lost 1-0 at Middlesbrough. But that Doncaster win in particular, 7 defeats in 8 games before that, so Paul Dickoff needed that. That was a real coupon buster.
Massive result, wasn't it? And some of the goals were really poor from Wigan's point of view. Was it the second goal where it kind of ball rebounded and he got the rebound off the keeper and dribbled in under the keeper, went in.
Coppinger.
Really poor indeed. But a brilliant result for Doncaster, 3-0, comfortable victory. And it's happened. It was about a month ago or so, wasn't it, that all the bottom teams won? So they do keep pulling results out of the fire, just as you think that they might be looking kind of like they're going to be cut adrift, so to speak. But they're right in there, and you would be worried if you're a Charlton fan. Sheffield Wednesday form have picked up, as we mentioned just a bit earlier. So Bolton, you've got to be worried as well, even though you're 4 points clear of the relegation zone. They're right bang in it. I mean,
Roll the tapes, everyone.
Looking at that table, I mean, even Birmingham, and then the next two clubs above that is Watford and Bournemouth. Watford. We're not in a relegation battle.
Ipswich haven't won since Boxing Day. You know why, don't you? Because he got rid of the beard. He's got rid of the beard. They've not won since.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that just shows you, if you've got a superstition in football and things are going your way,
keep it.
Change it at your peril.
Unbelievable.
Paul Ince then.
Well, he's still there, isn't he?
He's still there.
Last night, I was thinking...
Maybe we're going to cover Blackpool on the show this week, but he's still there, so we kind of thought, what's the point?
Save that to next week when he's no longer in a job, probably.
Another good start
to the season.
Yeah, do you remember when we had Will on earlier in the season and we were talking about how they kept winning, they were still up there, and complete turnaround. And what's this run? They've lost 9 out of 10.
I mean, I'd be quite happy for any Blackpool fan to disagree with me here, because obviously I don't watch them week in, week out. I just see the highlights on the Football League show. But Tom Ince basically kept them up last season. He got an incredible amount of goals. He got loads of assists as well. Unlucky to not get player of the season, really. Or Zaha got it in the end. But this season, I just wonder if maybe he's holding them back, strange as that, even though he's clearly their best player. Because they could cash in on him, get big money for him. You might even get 10 million for him or something in that region.
He's been linked to Monaco.
That's what I was just going to say. Monaco's the latest thing to be linked to him.
Cash in on him, and then you can invest in that team. You know, tell the chairman, look, we need the money for the team, Carl. You can't keep it in the club's coffers. We need to reinvest in this team and help us rise back up the table, because they did have a good start to the season, but they've fallen off the face of a cliff now. Relegation form over the last few months, and you know, you don't want to be relying on Tom Ince to bail them out again, because he might not be able to do it, you know, again all on his own. So you can't, like you said, a few teams are already relying on one player. It's always a dangerous situation to be in. You've got to spread the quality and spread the goals throughout the team, and they can do that if they sell a big asset like
this. I think you're quite right. The match reports suggest that, you know, he looked completely disinterested. Just the time comes when you've got to accept.
You're in the transfer window now. Do it, I think, I say.
Before we leave the Championship, I'm sure you want to mention the wrong Watford player getting sent off by that ref at Bournemouth.
Wasn't it?
What was that all about?
Well, it was Ekstrand and Fitz Hall who were running back with
Mark
Lewis Grabban.
Lewis Grabban, that's right.
And it looked like Ekstrand was the one that slid in and made the foul, but then if you look at the linesman, when he flagged for the penalty, he made a gesture as if it was a shirt pull, which would have meant it would have been Fitz Hall that was the one who should have been booked, and he sends off Gabriel Anguilla, who'd scored the goal for us to put us 1-0 up, and he's nowhere near the play, and he gets sent off. We have appealed. It should be rescinded. I don't know whether that means Fitz Hall will subsequently serve a ban. I'm not sure exactly what will happen as a result of that staggering piece of incompetence from the referee and his assistant. And then they go and give another penalty later on in the game, which could have lost us the game were it not for Manuel Almunia's double save. Mark Pugh, and he's saying that, oh, I'm travelling so fast, and he posted on Twitter this earlier on, I was travelling so fast and the slightest bit of contact can take you down. Rubbish. He was past Almunia and Fitzgerald.
Don't get me started on this.
He could have scored and he goes down theatrically. It's ridiculous, and justice was done.
Why does contact, I mean, sorry, this is going on to the Suarez thing in the Premier League as well, let's obviously not talk specifically about that, but why does contact when you go past the keeper mean it's a foul? Contact anywhere else on the pitch is not necessarily a foul.
It's a contact sport.
It
can also work exactly the other way around. It was the Charlton game where Chris Powell was up in arms that Simon Church's goal got disallowed because he said Church only had eyes for the ball. Well, you can make contact with a player and foul someone without meaning to do so, and you can also the other way around. You can make contact with a player and that doesn't necessarily mean it's a foul. It works both ways, and it doesn't seem to be any again and again and again with any refereeing the situation. There doesn't seem to be any real consistency.
The rules of the penalty box are a very mystical one, which perhaps have been unanswered.
Well, especially when you're sending off the wrong bloke completely. League One, Leighton Orient back top of the table. They're 10th away league win of the season. They've won twice away from home in the last 7 days since the last show at Shrewsbury in midweek, and then at Crewe on Saturday. Chris Dagnall's come in.
They brought him in on and two goals, coming off the bench, I believe. He's been particularly unprolific anywhere other than probably Rochdale in his career. They've got someone who can score goals alongside.
These little moments here and there, little flashes of quality. Scored some nice goals, I believe, for Scunthorpe. I think scored some nice goals for Barnsley as well. Just these little moments that I seem to remember of the last few seasons, where he scores a nice goal and then you don't hear about him again for a few months. And the first goal in particular was a really nicely taken goal. Good run in behind, left foot across the keeper. And Leighton Orient needed a bit of help, didn't they, with the injuries that they've had. And he's going to contribute.
Brentford drew Walsall just below them, so they're now in second. The Wolves game was called off. Rotherham won at Shrewsbury. They're still in the play. But we've got to talk about that. Frank Musa goal for Coventry away at Preston in the 97th minute. Just set up perfect for him, didn't it? Absolutely spanked at home.
Absolutely fantastic strike. If you're being picky, I would say the Preston defender, he's cleared it into a poor area there, right back into the middle of the pitch.
If
that's in the stand in the last kick of the game, you've got the victory, haven't you? And just before that, Kevin Davies being sent off with a very rash challenge from behind, and he seemed to be up in arms, couldn't really understand it. But from a man of his experience, although I know he does like a foul, he's not been sent off too many times in his career, to be fair.
Of bookings for the barge.
I think that'd be disappointing for him, because they need him. He's been good, recently. He's been in the goals.
Scored and got sent off on Saturday.
I mentioned just while we're at the top there as well, Walsall, who did stop Brentford's incredible invincible run, a team that not quite in the playoffs yet.
Invincible.
It's a new one on me, yeah.
Managed to get the draw against Brentford. And I just wonder if they can sneak in there in the playoffs, so they can pick up points like that against teams like that. They'll go under the radar. We rarely mention them, do we? And who knows?
You're right to mention them, because again, they lost the two best players in the summer, Will Grigg and Jamie Patterson, who both left. Grigg to Brentford and Patterson to Nottingham Forest. He's picked up now, hasn't he? But they're still right there in the playoff picture. Dean Smith's done a fantastic job, and he's a manager. When I was talking to Millwall fans when they were trying to replace Steve Lomas, they were saying, well, who can we have? Who's good enough in the lower league? I want someone with experience, and Dean Smith was the name that I gave them if you were looking for someone in League One who wouldn't be very expensive and has done an excellent job on a shoestring budget, bought through young players. He's certainly someone I think clubs are going to be looking at, but he's doing a great job at Walsall in his own right.
Big win for Peterborough, wasn't it, against Tranmere on Saturday, because Darren McAntony had to come out midweek and issue the dreaded vote of confidence in Darren Ferguson. They'd lost 9-12 before that game, including that embarrassing exit to Kidderminster in the FA Cup in midweek, but they did look back to form on Saturday. Nicky Ejosi, a man who's been at that club for a couple of years but been out on loan pretty much at every other club while he's been there, finally scored his first goal for the club, and Britt Sombalonga has hit 20 for the season.
Goals.
You could have done with them, couldn't you?
We could have. Even if he'd scored 10 for us, if he'd stayed in the Championship, would have done. We just need someone with a bit of pace, and he's got that by the looks of things. And actually, he's been a bit out of sorts recently. He hasn't
the whole
quite
team,
looked,
really,
hasn't
yeah.
quite obviously yeah, along with the rest of the team, hasn't quite looked the same. But he did get his 20th goal, and he's had a that move's really been been fantastic for him.
Okay, down to the bottom of League One. This is something we haven't really talked about a lot this season. We touched on the top of League Two and the top of League One and the bottom of League Two. What about the bottom of League One? Because Notts County have won three games in a row. The latest 1-0 at Stevenage. They're up to 16th. So you've got Notts County, Oldham, Carlisle on 27, Sheffield United, Shrewsbury on 26, Tranmere, Bristol City, Crewe and Stevenage all in the relegation spots at the moment. In fact, six of the bottom eight lost at the weekend. Bristol City and Sheffield United, the two big teams down there, drew. How do you assess that with 20 games to go?
Not good for Stevenage, is it? And they've got Everton, haven't they, in the cup at the weekend.
They have.
Which
on the telly as well.
Perhaps a welcome respite for them. And you know, they can give it a real on the TV. Maybe the cup run can inspire them, as we've talked about with Bolton and with Southend. But it doesn't look good for Wesley and Stevenage.
Look at Crewe's goal difference, minus 28.
Oh, appalling, isn't it?
They've had a bad season this year.
I can feel
a phone call to Hugh Wilson coming on.
Yeah, but going 1-0 up against Leighton Orient, you thought maybe they could hold on. Chukwuneke had a good chance to make it 2 as well, so that's a missed opportunity for them. Bristol City, we've talked about at some length various points this season. Tranmere have just re-signed Jake Cassidy, who was the player that scored a lot of goals for them in the first half of last season when they were up right at the top end of the division, and he left to go back to Wolves in January, and subsequently their form, not solely because of him, but he was one of the reasons why perhaps they didn't keep up the form in the second half of the season. So they've got him back because he's not been playing at Wolves this season. He's down the pecking order, so that's a good sign for them. Maybe he can lift them out of the bottom four.
And Notts County, as you say, three wins in a row. I mean, okay, not going to say they're safe, but a change in manager has eventually started to pay off now, Sean Derry, and yep, that's what some of these clubs are probably going to need.
League Two then, we talked about Southend's big win earlier. Scunny were held by Wimbledon. Rochdale absolutely rampant again, destroyed Plymouth 3-0. They're looking very good at the moment. Accrington Stanley winning at Cheltenham, but their manager, James Beattie, has been fined $20,000. In fact, the club have been fined $20,000 because he didn't have the right coaching qualifications.
Most of the fines have been suspended, at least. Yeah. So they obviously can't afford it, can they?
Exactly. It was a brilliant tweet going doing the rounds earlier on. I don't know whether someone modified it or whether Sky did actually tweet this first off the bat. Obviously, as you correctly say, they've been fined because he hasn't got the right qualifications, and that's fine. But the tweet that was going around was the FA fine, or the Football League fine, Accrington Stanley £20,000 for appointing James Beattie as manager. Which, at first glance, I thought was a bit harsh.
Very harsh.
He's done it right the last two months, hasn't he?
Things around. They were the big winners down the bottom. Mansfield, Bury, Portsmouth and Bristol Rovers all drawing in the game between the bottom two was postponed. Rumours on Ben Trasler's Twitter that Colin Calderwood and Paul Trollope could be going back to Northampton. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but watch this space. Bit on the transfer window and the FA Cup before we go. Nicky Maynard, Cardiff to Wigan on loan. Aaron McLean's gone from Hull to Bradford. They needed a new striker to replace Naki Wells.
At League One level, he's decent enough.
Yeah, brought him in. Joe Lolley we mentioned, and Chris Dagnall. Nathaniel Chalabar gone from Chelsea to Middlesbrough on loan. He's doing the rounds, isn't he?
Well, Karanka's called up Mourinho and said, who are your best young players that are not going to get anywhere near the team ever? There he is.
Well, Patrick Bamford would be enough one of those. You should have took him.
Did you know that Liam Lawrence has been playing for PAOK Salonika?
I didn't.
he's back. He's signed for Barnsley. That's one I just
a bit different
spotted.
From,
when I was scrolling through
to Middle Yorkshire.
Right. Okay. That's pretty much it. This weekend in the FA Cup, fourth round, there are seven ties which feature Football League clubs at home to Premier League opposition. So I'm going to read you those seven, and you've got to call where the upset's going to come from if there's going to be one. Okay. Right. These are the seven games featuring Football League clubs at home to Premier League opposition: Bournemouth against Liverpool, Birmingham against Swansea, Bolton against Cardiff, Manchester City, Watford away, aren't they? You get off that. You've got Southend against...
Well, Watford can't do much worse than West Ham.
That's true. Sorry, Southend against Hull, that's the fourth. Wigan against Crystal Palace is the fifth. Stevenage against Everton, and Sheffield United against Fulham. Pick one of those.
We mentioned how Southend...
I'm going to go for Southend.
Southend v Hull could have been on the telly compared to, you know, Chelsea versus Stoke, and...
I'm calling it Southend.
I do just wonder. Liverpool aren't going to play the likes of Suarez. If they do, then Moore have got no chance.
But the second striker has probably dived at Dean Court this week if it does happen.
Yeah.
Dave, what are you going for out of that?
I'm going to say Sheffield United at Fulham. Because Fulham are...
Home to Fulham, that is, yeah.
Yep, right in the relegation battle. I don't think they even wanted to get through the last round against Norwich, to be honest with you. They were disappointed when they got the equaliser to take it to a replay.
Magic in the FA Cup.
They want to stay in the Premier League, and I don't think they're interested. I think I think Southend and Harlan's also another real big chance, because I think a lot of it will come down to how many players are rested, and I can see a lot of players being rested by the Premier League teams. Liverpool, different proposition. I think Bournemouth will definitely lose to them, the two clubs that are looking downwards, I think they'll possibly go out.
I'd be tempted to say Wigan as well, but I know Tony Pulis will probably take it seriously and probably won't rest players, but Wigan have been a decent bit of form and are obviously holders. So put a draw on that one.
Okay. A quick plug for the blogs on the website before we go. You're after League Two writers, are you?
Some new League Two writers wouldn't go amiss. I had plenty of League Two blogs actually this week. Lots of Cheltenham. With a very good blog on AFC Wimbledon and their season so far, kind of failing to live up to some of the hopes, and plenty of other blogs up and down the leagues.
Okay, we are going up.co.uk to look at those. You can also listen to the show on SoundCloud. Visit our SoundCloud page. It's soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast, and you can get us on iTunes, where we'd appreciate if you just knock the old rate and review on there as well.
I do note before you go anywhere, last week you mentioned the fantasy football team.
Oh yeah,
and how I'm top.
God, I looked at
it. Yeah, I've not checked it for months. Brilliant.
Well, have you looked at yours? Have you?
Yeah, terrible.
Right, that's it. Twitter is at Wagyu Podcast as well. We are back next week, looking back at some of the FA Cup action and the games that are going on in the Football League this weekend. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.